Hi there and welcome. It is your show, Take Two, with Jerry and Debbie and you on EWTN Radio. I am Jerry Usher along with Debbie Giorgiani. And we're going to ask the you part of the program, the Take Two family, to not call in today because it is a pre-recorded broadcast. I want to wish you a blessed Thanksgiving, a day after the fact. Thank you so much. I hope and pray that you were with loved ones, family members, people who lift your soul up to the Lord and had a blessed Thanksgiving. And if you've got this entire, say, four-day weekend, well, we hope that it is going to be a blessed time for you. Debbie, we're going to be talking today with a very special guest we've had on the show before, and we're going to be talking about something that is often not very well known among Catholics, certainly misunderstood by non-Catholics, but we're going to be talking about the topic of purgatory.
We are. The Holy Souls in Purgatory, especially to finish this month of November, where we remember the poor souls in purgatory. But so we're bringing on an expert, Jerry. She's been known for many years as the purgatory lady. She knows everything about it. I love speaking with her because she gets me so fired up and makes me want to pray more and just love the holy souls in purgatory, Jerry.
Susan Tassoni is joining us here. She's long been a passionate champion for the Holy Souls in Purgatory and is recognized as a leading worldwide purgatory movement. She is an award-winning author of 13 bestsellers, including works on purgatory. You can find many of them at EWTNRC.com. In fact, EWTN says of her that Susan Tassoni is the all-time best-selling author in the history of the network. So she has definitely sold some books, and she knows what she's talking about, because she holds a master's degree in religious education from Loyola University in Chicago, and had the honor of and privilege of being granted two private audiences with Pope St. John Paul II, who bestowed a special blessing on her and her ministry for the Holy Soul. So, Susan, we want to welcome you back to Take Two. How are you?
Oh, Jerry and Debbie, thanks for having me. Yes, we're wrapping it up for November, but it's not over yet.
Right.
Most people don't know this, but the greatest number of souls are released at Christmas, not on All Souls Day. So we have another job. We're not done yet. We need to take them along through Advent, because they're waiting, but they're waiting for paradise. So Christmas is when they're released, and I kind of say Rome time, because it's midnight there, you know, before it comes around to the United States. So I think they're out by maybe some of the islands, you know, hit dawn, but that's some people. Teresa of Avila and Alphonsus Liguori were the two saints that shared that in their revelations.
Mm. Now, Susan, that is a private revelation, right?
So they're both private, yeah.
Right. So, and all the years you've been studying and working with and loving the holy souls in purgatory, other than those two saints, I'm sure you've heard it numerous times, right? From other writings.
Yeah. There is Medjugorje, and I know that the recent messages are ecclesiastically approved, mm-hmm. and they've been given a Neil Abstott. And so that there was a message early in the 80s from Our Lady of Medjugorje that said, you know, she confirmed it as well. So what she was saying is what I already found, you know, through the saints, that yes, most souls are released at Christmas, and then Easter, and then, well, I'm adding this because of the research I did, Easter, and of course her feast days and his feast days, and some of the most abandoned souls, she commented about, and of course, again, through my research as I was, you know, doing it, you know, and my research came out of the St. Mary of the Lake Seminary in Mundelein in Chicago. It had the largest collection of purgatory works in the country. But she said priests and consecrated religious are the most. Well, I call them two groups: priests and consecrated religious, because we canonize them. We have them sainted, and then those that don't believe in the doctrine of purgatory, you can be non-Catholic, but also Catholics don't believe in the doctrine. It is a doctrine, as you know, and it's something that we have to believe in. It's part of our faith.
Mm. Well, Susan, we're going to take a short break in about 2 minutes, but in that time, just give us a snapshot. We can continue on the other side of the break, but let's just get real foundational for a moment here. You know, why does purgatory exist?
Why does it exist? It exists, Jerry, because of God's love. It's not a punishment. We have to, you know, get rid of that word punishment, but it's his mercy, and it's his unspeakable, and it's his incomprehensible holiness that it exists. It's his love that cleanses and purifies us to be able to stand before him. Because of our sin and our selfishness, we need purification and healing. And so this is a loving purgatory. It's not a purgatory of punishment. It could only be called punishment in the sense that purgatory will be spiritually and psychologically demanding, as any virtue is, because, you know, too strong an emphasis has been given on purgatory as a punishment. It's the wrong way to look at it, because, you know, God is not trying to get even with us. It's not a way of him lowering the boom. He doesn't say to us, you failed me completely, or enough, I'm through with you. Rather, he comes to help complete the work we've left undone. So he's preparing his unprepared children for the joys of heaven, because we were charged with a mission, every single person that's ever been born. And it's such an honor to exist, because he didn't have to choose you. There was a gazillion souls he could have picked, but he chose you, Jerry, and you, Debbie, and all you listeners, because there was something about us that he wanted us to be with him for all eternity. But he gave us a mission, so we're charged by the gospel to prepare for heaven while we're alive on earth. And he extends all the graces we need countless times, you know. But if people gave little notice to him and prepared less seriously, then they'll find themselves in a very uncertain and precarious position. But whose fault is that? Who do you blame? It's us. We're the ones that choose that. So purgatory is a place where shallowness and selfishness are overcome. It's a time of spiritual growth. It's a time of maturing. So it's God's merciful option for the incomplete, not for those who reject God altogether. And then there's this one quote that actually it was on EWTN. There was a series at the University of Dallas, and I happened to pick it up one morning.
Susan, if you can hold that thought just for a second. Sure. I want to hear that quote. I can't wait to hear it, and I know Debbie shares that with me. But you hear the music there. We're going to just take a short pause here. It's a pre-recorded broadcast of Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, with Susan Tassone talking about purgatory, this month of the Holy Souls winding down. But there is still, well, there are always opportunities for us to help the Holy Souls in purgatory. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more here on EWTN Radio. Please stay with us.
Enjoying this broadcast. It's a pre-recorded broadcast just for you, the Take Two family. Maybe you're the day after Thanksgiving, you're still with family and friends, or shopping, or doing something of that nature. Well, take the time to just sit and listen to Susan, because she truly is an expert. She's amazing when she talks about purgatory, and it's so many things that you can learn and share with your family members throughout the whole entire Thanksgiving weekend. So no calls today, just sit back and listen and learn to Susan, and we're going to ask her more questions, and hopefully your question will get answered, because you sent in a lot of questions at the beginning of November, all about having masses said, and why do we call them the poor souls, the holy souls, why is a whole month dedicated to them, all these questions. Hopefully if we go fast enough, Jerry, Susan will be able to answer them. So Susan, did you want to pick up anything that you were sharing before the break?
Pick up what I was saying, that, you know, as we said, God's not trying to get even with people. He's not trying to lower the boom. He's come to help us complete the work we've left undone. So he's preparing his unprepared children for the joys of heaven. And as I said, we were charged with a mission. We were charged by the gospel to prepare. We've been given all the graces to do that. And sometimes we don't do that. And whose fault is it? We can't blame God. So purgatory is a place where we, you know, where the shallowness and where the selfishness are overcome. So it's a time of spiritual growth. It's God's merciful option for the incomplete, not for those who reject him. And I was commenting about the mission, how we're given a mission on earth. Every single person on earth has been given a mission. People say, how do you know your mission? And it's very easy, because I didn't know what my mission was when I was younger. In the days I was in school, we didn't have all the services and counselors that would test you and do all these things. These kids nowadays are very lucky. We had to just figure it out ourselves. However, I was smart enough. I prayed. That's all I did. Prayed the rosary, go to Mass, and just, you know, you tell God what I'm thinking about doing, and he put everything in place. People underestimate the power of prayer. Mm-hmm. Every apparition that Our Lady has appeared, Medjugorje, Bonneau, Borang, Fatima, Lourdes, Garib Mandel, what does she do? She comes with, sometimes with her son, but what's on her arm? She comes with a mission for us to pray. And the rosary is usually on her arm. So that rosary is the weapon. And as I tell my nieces and the young kids, don't let go of her hand. Mm-hmm. Pray the rosary. So the mission, there was this quote from the University of Dallas. It was the Quest series. And I just loved it. It said, our lives are not just being good, but it involves God having providentially placed you in this world for some reason. Mm-hmm. What I've been appointed to do, that is the definite service that God wants me to give to the world, that no one else has been appointed that task. No one. It's your task and no one in the world. And if in some way I don't fulfill it, it might go unfulfilled in the history of the world.
Wow. Mm, wow. Wow. Hey, Susan, I have to ask you this question. Sorry for I'm interrupting you, but
no worries.
You said something that just kind of it sat with me a little bit in an odd way, because I've heard other people on Catholic radio speak about purgatory, and I've heard them say that through private revelation and other things, that this purgatory is worse than, you know, our most terrible day on earth. Is that true?
That is true, and that comes from I think, Catherine, you know, it comes from the revelations of the saints. It is worse than any illness or suffering on earth. That's very hard to get your head around, because you see suffering. I saw my mother suffer, die. I was present. It was so hard for me. We see suffering now, you know, in the wars, children, there's so much. But yes, it's worse than any of that. And why is that? Well, because they saw God. Once a soul leaves the body, it's like a magnet to iron. It shoots itself right back to God where it came from. And they saw God, and they saw God in all his lovableness, his majesty, his holiness. They saw the plans that God, you know, had for you, and where you said yes and where you said no. They saw the intense love. He loves us more than anybody else, and he loves us more than anybody can. And once you see God, the eyes of the soul cannot close without being in utter agony, and it cries out, you know, God, God, I must be with God. But it's the soul that sees where it stands before God, and it's the soul that makes that decision to say, I'm not ready, I'm not prepared, and it hurls itself into purgatory. So there's really no rebellion in purgatory. They choose purgatory because they're not ready, and they want to be ready to be able to stand before God. And in fact, and I don't have it in front of me, one of the revelations, Faustina had a conversation with the souls, and I just know the answer. You know, she asked them a question, and what was their greatest joy? Let's just say probably that was what it was. And they said, doing the will of God in all things. That was their greatest joy.
Mm. Fantastic. This is just a really life-giving broadcast here. We're learning so much about God and who he is, how much he loves us, how much he wants us to be with him, and really what is required of us to be with him for all eternity, and that is to become completely holy and have our hearts be completely undivided, all of our love given to him. And sometimes when we pass from this life, that requires a little bit of time getting accustomed to that. God kind of cleans us up a little bit and helps us to love him completely in what is called purgatory. Susan Tassoni is with us talking about that here on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. I hope you had a blessed Thanksgiving. It is a taped broadcast today, not taking your live calls, but learning ever so much, as I said a moment ago. So, Susan, you've sort of alluded to this a little bit in terms of the degree of suffering, but what do souls in purgatory suffer? Is it fire?
Yes.
It the absence of God? What is the suffering?
It's their primary loss, Jerry and Debbie, is the loss of the sight of God. That's the primary loss. Once a soul sees God, the eyes of the soul cannot close without being in agony. It cries out, I must be with God. and it's God's burning love, his longing for the soul, that creates their longing for him. And so they, quote, burn for love of God. They have an unquenchable thirst for God. They have an unspeakable yearning for God. Their hunger, their thirst, their famine, their drought is for God. And it's a heart sickness. So that's the prayer of purgatory. And they willingly suffer. There's no rebellion. They do not want to go to heaven any, not even 1 millisecond earlier, because they want to be able to be totally purified. And you know, they want God's will. In fact, I've watched Mother Angelica for many years. I've met her a couple times. You know, I even got on the air with her back in the early 90s. And I said, how do you avoid purgatory? And she was correct, because I've done the research. I just wanted to hear what she had to say. Do the will of God in all things.
Yep.
You want to avoid purgatory? Just abandon yourself to God in all things. And of course, you know, state of grace. You know, there's, you know, you have to confess the sacraments. What, you know, what helps you? You know, the Mass, the Rosary. You know, confession. What was I? First Friday, all the devotions. You know, Mother Angelica talked about that continuously. That's how you become holy. Saying yes to God.
Mm-hmm. Susan, let me ask you this question. Why is it that we call them the poor souls of purgatory or the holy souls of purgatory? Why both terms?
I asked myself that too when I started to do this work, because I would see the word poor souls, and then I would see the holy souls, and then I would see both, and I'm like, well, which is it? And it's both. They're called holy because they can no longer sin. They're called holy because they know they're saved. They're called poor because their time, you know, once the soul leaves the body, the time of merit ceases. So the soul is either paying a debt in purgatory, or they're in heaven, or God forbid, they're in hell. So that's why they're called poor. They're called poor because they don't know. So they're poor because their time of merit is up. And so they only, for whatever reasons, we've been given the privilege and the power to help them. God puts it in our hands. So that's why they're called poor. They're helpless, like babies. They're called poor because they don't know when this suffering is going to end. And of course, they're called poor because they lost the sight of God. So they're called poor because they lost the sight of God. They don't know when they're going to be released. They can no longer merit. They're called holy because they can no longer sin, and they're saved. They're saved. They know they're saved. So we're their own, for whatever reasons, we're their only deliverers. Heaven encourages them, and we deliver them. Heaven encourages us, too. So we've been given this duty, this power, and privilege to release them. So God, in a sense, has tied his hands. He allows the soul no more penance, no meriting. And so, you know, we need to learn from purgatory, too, and we need to avoid purgatory, and we need to help empty purgatory. And so this is a Christmas message. Remember, the most greatest souls are released at Christmas. So this is Advent. They're waiting like we are. What do they want? You know, they don't want their favorite mug at the gravesite. They want to be home with God. So give them their desire. Make their desire your desire, which is heaven, the beatific vision.
Wow.
Susan, there are probably a lot of people, I hope there are a lot of people listening today who are now gaining a better understanding and appreciation of what the concept of purgatory is, who might be asking themselves, well, concretely, what can I do? You mentioned the rosary, the power of the rosary, but for people who are listening right now who want to come to the aid of their deceased loved ones who may be spending some time in purgatory, what can they do, you know, on a concrete basis?
Mm-hmm. A very concrete, and I call them the four pillars, Jerry. In any article you've seen me, and you know, you want to read more about the souls, go to National Catholic Register. I've been interviewed many times by Joe Pronichin, and we've got it in there. I call it the four pillars. The most powerful way, the greatest gift you can give them is the Mass, the body and blood of Jesus. They need the Mass. It's the highest act of worship. It's the highest form of prayer. You could attend, when you attend Mass, I'm very curious to know if people are, you know, asking questions. How many people go to Mass with an intention to say this Mass is for the souls in purgatory, or for a particular soul, or for an intention? This Mass, this communion, is for this. How many give that indulgence? Now, remember, you can only give an indulgence to yourself or to the deceased. How many times do you go to Mass and impart an indulgence to the soul? So I can't stress enough about the Mass. Either attend Mass or have Masses offered, or there's Mass associations. I like the Miraculous Medal Association. You can enroll. There's another. This is one I really discovered when I was doing the children's book, Jerry and Debbie, Our Lady of the Angels.net. I've never seen an association like this. It has you turn in your family tree. So it would be Jerry and his wife. It would be Jerry's brothers and his wife's brothers and sisters. It would be Jerry's parents and his wife's parents. And it would be your children, and then your grandparents on both sides, and then your grandchildren to all future generations. They cover the whole family tree, where the family tree is prayed for throughout life with Masses and after their death. I've encouraged many people. It's in my children's book, and I've done it for my family because, you know, we're not wealthy, you know, we're not millionaires, but we have the greatest gift we can give them is prayer and Masses. So when I die, at least I know they're going to get these Masses set for them, to give them the grace that whatever they need throughout life, and give them the grace of a happy death at the hour of their death, which is what's a happy death. Is it to die with a smile on your face? No, it's to die not in the state of Illinois or Alabama, but in the state of grace.
Amen. Amen.
So you got Susan, the Mass. Then alongside the Mass, the rosary, the weapon. It's the most powerful Marian prayer on earth. Why do they need the rosary? Because of the indulgences that are attached to them. Then alongside the rosary is the Stations of the Cross. Again, you're recalling, you're recollecting, you're meditating on our Lord's Passion. And again, there's indulgences that are attached to them. That's why it's powerful. And of course, adoration. So those are the four pillars.
Beautiful. Susan, real quickly, you need to give that website again, because you do realize we're going to get flooded with emails asking about that website.
The website for this association that you can cover your family tree. And I have to say, their requested donation is extremely reasonable when you can put your whole family tree in there. It's Our Lady of Angels.net, www.OurLadyOfAngels.net. And so that's what you do. It's a great gift to, you know.
Yeah.
I can't say enough about it. I'm just so happy I discovered it.
This is amazing. I'm going to give it as Christmas gifts. Susan, we have to go to another break real quickly, but real fast. Is it okay to put that you want Masses said in your will?
Oh, my gosh. that's the number one thing I say. I think I've done over 60 shows on EWTN. Put them in your will. And there are special Masses that we did talk about, if you know, after the break, Gregorian Masses. I'm going to be, you know, if I could engrave that on my tombstone, I would say, put Gregorian Masses in your will. Are you going to the break? Because I'll wait until we come back.
We're going to the break.
Yeah,
Jerry.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick pause here with Susan DeSoni, talking about purgatory, learning a lot, but also being inspired in many, many beautiful ways on this day after Thanksgiving. Hope and pray again that you are able to spend some time relaxing and enjoying family, friends, loved ones, maybe a little bit of extra food that you would normally eat. But
working off that food.
That's right. We're going to continue this conversation. The month of November, the church gives us as the month for the Holy Souls in Purgatory, learning what that's all about. And we're going to learn some things, folks, that you can do to help immensely your loved ones who have passed on, who maybe have been required to spend a little time in purgatory. So stay with us here on EWTN Radio. Be right back.
We're having a great discussion with our dear friend Susan DeSoni. We love talking to her. We learned so much from all the work that she's done for us for so many years, and it's just incredible. And I love the book, your newest book, New Friends, Now and Forever, Susan. Great book. It's a winner of 5 Catholic Media Association Awards. Oh, well done. Incredible. What a beautiful book. New Friends, Now and Forever by Susan Tassone. But Susan, real quickly, let's go into having Masses said, Gregorian Masses.
Yes.
What's the difference?
What are Gregorian Masses, you know, and how do we get them? What are they all about? There are 30 Masses in a row for one deceased soul, not for family, not for a couple, not for anybody living. It's for one deceased soul. And they were popularized by Pope St. Gregory when there was a monk that had, his name was Justice, and Justice was dying. And Justice had a brother named Copiosus. Copiosus was a doctor. So he was helping Justice in his, you know, during his final illness. And so after he died, Pope St. Gregory, he wasn't Pope at the time, but, you know, they're named after him, Gregorian Masses. He ordered 30 Masses to be said for the soul of Justice. And after the 30th Mass, Justice appeared to Pope St. Gregory, and he appeared to Copiosus and said he was released from purgatory after the 30th Mass. And so the $64,000 question is, does the church confirm that after 30 Masses, a soul will be released? They don't go that far. They go as far to say this. It points to the power and the efficacy of the Masses. So why 30 Masses? Why wasn't there 31 or 60? Or what was so magic about 30? Pope St. Gregory, it's a tradition back to the Old Testament. Moses, Aaron, and Jacob honored their dead for 30 days. And the way they honored their dead was helping the sick and the suffering and doing works of charity. That was how they honored them. So it was for 30 days. We have it today. If, you know, when the Pope dies or a cardinal dies, you'll see the bunching, the draping in front of the doors for 30 days. So that's where 30 days come from. So I can't stress enough. And part of the reason I want to share this too, I've done several radio shows, but there was a great, great article in Catholic, you could go online in National Catholic Register about why is there, you know, why are families or the loved ones of the deceased not having funeral masses? And they talked about, you know, what caused it, what's causing it. But there is an upturn, but a lot of it has to do during COVID had started this because of COVID, there was more cremations. Also because some family members, you know, were not practicing their faith, and then they just didn't understand the power and how important it is to, you know, to have your loved one have a mass offered. And so as I was reading the article, you know, what do you do if you have in your will, you know, you want these things and they're sidestepped, you know what you should put in your will? Gregorian Masses. Put them in your will, because if things don't get are not fulfilled as per your wishes, at least you have in your will Gregorian Masses, so you'll be assured of at least 30 Masses for your soul.
Yeah, this is great information that we're learning here. These are the kind of things, you know, most everybody leaves a will. Why not leave a kind of a spiritual will, if you can call it that? Because this is just a great way that we're to be ensure that we're going to be covered in prayer. And like you said, prayer and masses and other things. So, Susan, you mentioned a couple of times, you know, the holy souls in purgatory cannot merit for themselves. We can merit for them through our prayers and sacrifices. What about the angelic world? Okay, what do the angels, is there any way that they play a role in helping the holy souls?
Yes, the angels do a lot more than provide transportation on their way home. I strongly recommend that you know, and many saints, Padre Pio, Jose Escriva, many saints say have a relationship with your angels, because they're very busy in purgatory, because they do a couple things, Jerry and Debbie. The angels console the holy souls, okay? Number one, they are still there with them. There's only one time the angels are always with us, except for, can you guess, except they depart. What when do you think they would depart? Can you take a guess?
When we die?
If you're damned to hell.
If you're damned to hell.
Oh, mm-hmm. Right.
That's when the only time they depart. But they're always with us. They're with you at purgatory. They're consoling you in purgatory. They're inspiring friends and relatives to offer a mass and practice good deeds for a speedy delivery from purgatory. The angels inform the holy souls who are assisting them to pray for those souls who help them. Mm-hmm. The angels also escort the souls to heaven with the speed of lightning. And in fact, there's like a, in one of my books, it's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite quotes that I had found about what they do when you know when you're released from purgatory. And this is my 30-day devotion book. They said the angel reveals to the poor souls, those who are assisting them by their prayers, when the hour of release has struck for the suffering soul, the guardian angel with the speed of lightning leads the soul to heaven. The guardian angel is often accompanied by a multitude of angels. So the entrance of the soul into heaven is truly a triumphant one. Right.
But Susan, let me ask you a question, because I studied angels for many, many years, and I've heard a different saint say that the guardian angel is with you, but obviously in a different capacity, because here they're here to guard us and guide us, right?
Right.
But with the purgatory, it's a different, you know, makeup.
Well, they're there to console you.
Right.
They're there to inspire your friends. They're there to inform you who's helping. And their charge is what you're saying. Their charge is to get us home to heaven. The guardian angels are intent on obtaining all the graces and favors from God for your eternal welfare. So okay. They're going to do every single thing that they need to do to get you home.
Okay, so some saints, I've heard them say that they visit you in purgatory. You're saying they stay with you?
Yes, they don't.
Okay.
It's Saint Michael that comes to visit with Our Lady to release souls out of purgatory.
Gotcha.
But the angel stays with you. I don't know, where would they go if they weren't with you?
I guess because they would be serving or ministering in a different capacity because they're in purgatory, not in...
In fact, you answered the question. They're serving as consolation,
right,
and as informing them.
This is
amazing. So you have a great devotion to your guardian angel. In fact, it was the guardian angel that brought Faustina to purgatory, and she said to them, you know, what their greatest torment was, and they answered all together, longing for God. That was their greatest torment.
Wow.
And she saw Our Lady visiting. From what I've read, that she and Michael go on Saturday to release souls, and they call her the Star of the Sea because she brings refreshment. And I couldn't figure out. I looked for a long time. What does Star of the Sea mean? I think it's in one of the litanies. Star of the Sea, pray for us. And so I had the opportunity to be with Father Apostoli. Father Apostoli, Father Groeschel, I used to call them the twins because they look alike. When we were doing the show, EWTN Prime, or Sunday Night Prime, we were doing a purgatory show. You can go online and see that, too. There were two-part series. That's a great show. I said, do you know anything about Star of the Sea? And he did. He did a great book on Fatima, a great, great book on Fatima, as to, you know, why was Amelia, who Amelia was that was in purgatory. I can tell you that in a second if you want to know. But I lost my train of thought. I'm talking too fast. Star of the Sea. He said that there's a fixed star called Polaris that navigators use to guide them. That's been there forever. And so she's considered the fixed star that guides us to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I need to say about it's important. What if the soul's already in heaven? And I get this all the time, and you get this standard answer, well, God applies the prayers to someone else. It's much greater than that. If the soul is already in heaven, you know, and you continue to pray for them, what happens to those prayers? Well, this is a term that I always talk about on EWTN. Any show I've ever done, we repeat it. There's a term that was attributed, accidental glory. Accidental glory is a term that's attributed to St. Thomas Aquinas, where if a soul's already in heaven and you continue to pray for them, that soul gets accidental glory, which means two things. It gets an increase in its intimacy with God, and it gets an increase in its intercessory power, which is in the Catechism, number 958. So the lesson is to never, never stop praying for your dead. This accidental glory is And I, Mother Angelica was the one that introduced me to it when I heard her talk about it. It's an extra boost. It's added joy. You know, it brings added joy to the soul. So that's what that means. It's added joy in heaven for them. And, of course, increases their intercessory power. So the more you pray to them, the more they can, you know, intercede for you.
So Jerry and I are fighting over who gets to ask you the next question, because this is sparking so many things in us. You go first, Jerry.
We just want to remind the Take Two family we're tuned in right now. This is a pre-recorded broadcast day after Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving a day late. Hope that it is a blessed weekend for you with maybe family, friends, and just an enjoyable time. We're talking with Susan DeSoni about purgatory. She has written a number of books about these. Just go to EWTNRC.com, and I'm sure you will find many of them there. We're learning a lot, and I think this is a very eye-opening conversation. And
yes.
Susan, I wanted to ask you a question that is kind of a little bit sensitive, in the sense that where I'm going with this is, what about at funerals? Okay, sometimes at funerals, I'm as you know, I'm in formation to be a priest here, good Lord willing, in a couple of years. When we do funerals, it's a temptation to want to avoid the whole thing about, well, the soul may not be in heaven, because that's, you know, kind of might bring the family down or whatever. How best should we approach this at a funeral?
It's a very sensitive issue, Jerry, because, Jerry, even with all the books I've written and people that I know that read my books, and then someone dies. It just happened to me a few days ago, where her sister was 80 and she just passed away. She just totally wiped out the fact that there was a purgatory, and she went to heaven. We do such an injustice, but it's really very sensitive, and there's not much you can do. However, what I've been trying to do, there's one last thing that, and maybe you're the one, Jerry, you know, I've asked several priests, will they write an article in homiletic review about how do you present that in a homily, a funeral homily? But because you don't want to offend the family, it will offend them. They're already grieving. To add that to their grief, you don't want to do that. So you can just, you know, basically say, you know, here's some extra things you can, you know, you can say, you can, here's some things you could do to increase their intercessory power. You know, if they're, you know, it's very delicate.
Yeah.
You have to watch how
you
say it. And in fact, I don't think I know of any priest except the ones that I've, you know, been to our events, our funeral, that they weren't afraid to say it because I was sitting there. So, but yeah, it's a fine line to present it. And I've been literally for the past couple years, I was looking for a priest to write an article on how helping priests, you know, present that in a homily, in a funeral homily. So maybe you're the one, Jerry.
There you go, Jerry.
Pray for me, Susan.
Yeah. I will. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's hard.
But,
and I think we just, you know, but again, you have to be, you know, be sensitive to the family, because they have canonized everybody. Everyone's canonized.
And Susan, real quickly, because I'm want to get this next question in, following what Jerry's line of thinking here. Why can't we just educate and inform those about accidental glory and being a stronger intercessor and the degrees of glory and, you know, creating this idea of what eternity is going to be like? We fall short in so many ways. I've been to so many funeral masses. They're beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But you do hear when the homily is or when they're talking about the deceased, it's almost like they're not sure what to say. They're tongue-tied a bit.
They are, because they don't want to offend the grieving family, and I don't blame them. So we need somebody to sit down and write some suggestions on how to approach it, Debbie. That's really the bottom line. And you nailed it. Education is the key. Do you know that I was doing St. Faustina Prayer Book for the Holy Souls, and I learned that when I was doing it at that time, my publisher is our Sunday visitor, and they did a Pew study, and they asked people, you know, I don't know how many thousands of people, you know, what was the topic that they wanted more information about, that they wanted to learn more about, that was important to them. Guess what they said? which was a shock to me. Purgatory.
Wow.
The number one topic out of any topic you can pick in our Catholic faith that they wanted to know more about, it was purgatory. Because, you know, in the immediate decades after the Second Vatican Council, the purgatory was less frequently taught in religious classes, or in religious classes, I should say. Mm-hmm. And so we had a whole generation that it wasn't passed down, the doctrine and what it meant. And so you ended up with what? What was the fruit? Teachers and parents, they lacked the knowledge to understand, to even talk about it with the students or their own children. But as you know, there's a huge turnaround in the years I've been doing this, 25 years, a big turnaround. It's, like I said, it's one of the most often asked about topics among the faithful. Mm-hmm. And so our job is to educate. We've got 9 books. We've got imprimaturs on every book. I have endorsements from the bishops and cardinals. So, you know, we now have been brought it forward, and I guess that's what God wanted. Bring it forward, and you have all the information you need about purgatory. You can get all these books through EWTN. And be careful with the books you pick. You want books that are solid and that have imprimaturs and Neil Obstats.
Right.
Don't want to go to the old books, because I'll share something that I learned. Some of these old books have Neil Obstats, but they're not updated.
Yeah. I agree. I totally agree. Same thing about angels, too. Same thing.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So you're spot on. Okay, so just a couple things, because Jerry gets to ask the next question. He wants to ask about apostolic pardons. But Susan, I just want to share with our listeners, too. Yes, EWTNRC.com. You can get Susan's books there. But go to Susan's website, SusanTassone.com. Please make sure you go there, because you'll see the release and then all the awards that New Friends Now and Forever, a story about the holy souls for children, but it's not for children. I have to tell you, my husband and I love this book. It's amazing. So SusanTassone.com. Jerry?
Yeah, and by the way, Tassone is T-A-S-S-O-N-E, SusanTassone.com.
Very Irish, Jerry.
yeah, right. Debbie anticipated my next question, and that is, it's funny, Susan, I just learned about the apostolic pardon within the last few years. I wasn't even aware of it. I'm sorry to say, when my sister passed away at the age of 57, I would have, she did have a priest visit her, though, and a very, very good priest, so I assume maybe he did know
You're
about
hoping
it.
He did.
And give her the apostolic pardon.
It's
but,
in their book to do that. There's a special name of the book that they use to have the, you know, say certain prayers, and it's in there.
Right.
But yes, now, you, in fact, you want some cards about it. You know who printed the most spectacular explanation? It is breathtaking. Our dear Father Wade. Father Wade. He's got these breathtaking cards that have the apostolic pardon in it. And what is it? It's like divine mercy grace that, you know, at the hour of your death, all temporal punishment is removed. It's a special indulgence that they impart at the hour of your death, where, you know, remember, you go to confession and the guilt is removed, but the stain is still there. How do you remove the stain? Through indulgences, works of mercy, corporal works of mercy throughout life. But at the hour of death, a priest can impart the apostolic pardon, just like Divine Mercy Sunday. And, you know, the stain, all temporal punishment is removed.
So Susan, real quickly, you were referring to Father Wade Menezes.
Yes.
And then, Susan, another thing I just want to share with you, I don't know if you know this, but we've had a lot of Take Two family members send in emails because we have spoken about the apostolic pardon and the prayer, and we've had Take Two family members send in emails saying that when they asked that of the priest that visited their loved one, the priest told them that he wasn't going to do it. So, yeah, what do you say about that?
Then you get another priest. That's what I would do. Or I don't know why. And they're going to be held accountable to God why they didn't impart that. If you're at the hour of death and you are dying, that's the time you impart it. And what, you know, Jerry and Debbie, I carry a card with me. In fact, one of our family members was dying in hospice. And my cousin had, I have it in my book, actually, Prayers, Promises, and Devotions, but you can also, I think, it, leaflet, missile cells, a pack of them. And, but I love Father Wade's, he's got his is really well, expelled out. Well, but well, take Susan, it, carry it with you. But right. when he died, I my cousin, middle of the night, I go, the book I gave you, turn to this page. When that priest walks in, you just be sure he says it. He imparts it, I should say.
Right.
And she, you know, hour later, there's like a check mark, done. But I don't understand why.
Well, Susan, could it be because it is an indulgence? And could it be because, you know, they feel that they've given the anointing or the final rites?
That's part of it, though.
I know, Debbie.
That's part of the whole... you know, that's part of the whole blessing is the apostolic pardon, the oils, everything. That's all part of, you know, excuse the term, right. it's all part of the package. Why right. they eliminated that is frightening. So that's another thing. Make sure you know your priest. I did a book during COVID. There were so many people dying, as you know, and it, there were five members of my family dying. And what happens is people, and this I discovered this myself, I couldn't, my aunt was dying. She caught COVID in a nursing home, and she was somewhere in the fields of Iowa. And I had to find a church to do that. And it took me forever. The priest drove 3 hours to get to her because he had to be a COVID priest trained, and he did get to her. She ended up dying shortly after that. But what was the lesson, me going through it? Be prepared, okay? Go to confession once a month. Make sure you know priests, because what I discovered, and I'm sure you have too, you can't find them. There's a shortage. You get voicemails. It's their day off, and it was a miracle that I got them. So my lesson was is, you know, make sure you're in the state of grace. Make sure you have the apostolic pardon. I carried the card with me, you know, and that's really the key thing, to be prepared. First Fridays, first Saturdays, devotions, confession. So when it happens, you're not rushing, and because I didn't know the state of my aunt's soul, chances are she hadn't seen a priest. She did have her scapular on because I sent it to her right a month before she died. So there you are, rushing, trying to get this done. But how do you do it ahead of time? You stay in the state of grace. Okay, mm-hmm. And then you make sure you have good priest friends that you know, because we had another death in our family, sudden, and I have good priest friends. So all I had to do is make a phone call, and he shot over to the emergency room and gave him the last rites, and he died.
Well,
so,
real quickly, Susan, I just have to say this. I did a quick search. I just went to this Catholic website, and it just said that a priest may refrain from the apostolic pardon if they don't have full knowledge of it, believe it or not, if they don't have full knowledge of it to perform it, or they also are, the person is not in a life and death situation.
Correct. If it's not life and death, that's
there
correct. Full mm-hmm. knowledge, it's in their book. They have a book of prayers. It's in there. And then, of course, this is just who I am. I carry it with me. I have it with me in case things happen, because I'm downtown Chicago, and I could, you know, things happen. People come to me. Can you get a priest here? And I just carry the card with me. I'm always, you know, you got to be one step ahead of time. One step ahead, I should say.
Well, Susan, correct me if I'm wrong. It's about a 10-second prayer, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not long.
No,
it's about...
no, not at all. Not
yeah.
at all. He refrains. They're trained and they know it's, and it's because I've gone through this. It's in their book, but mm-hmm. we have to gently remind them. And if the one priest didn't, in fact, I have to say this. I had a dear friend who was the president of the Ambassadors of Mary for 60 years, and we ran into a situation like that. You know what I did, Jerry and Debbie? I just was polite, thank you, picked up the phone, called another priest. He was a very Orthodox, holy Polish priest. Just got up from his chair, went over the hospital, and gave her what she needed. She deserved it. We deserve it. You know, yeah. I said
no,
enough. I don't want to go to purgatory.
No, Susan, you're preaching to the choir, obviously, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you're talking to someone here. Please, good Lord willing, if I get ordained and I'm in situations like this, I will. That'll be one of the first things I will do with the dying, because you know, I just know how important it is and how what a great gift it is, and I will do it. You know, in every possible situation.
Yes,
absolutely.
In fact, of course, we get that special grace of divine mercy, and then what else to do? First Fridays, first Saturdays, Our Lady promises that we're going to be given the grace of whatever we need at the hour of our death. Do the first Saturdays. Of course, it consoles her, you know, the sins against her immaculate heart. But the one of the greatest promises is, I will give you the grace you need. And I've been doing that for many years. And when you start praying, you got to, Jesus and Mary, they like when you pray big. So what I said to Our Lady, look, we got a big Italian family. Many of them are not practicing. They do believe. And so when I do the first Friday, first Saturdays, which are coming up, you know, I said, I want the graces of both first Fridays and first Saturdays for my family, past, present, and future, until the end of time.
Susan, we got to go. We're running out of time here. We could do a whole month of shows with you, and one of these times we'll have to do like a week-long series or something. This is just absolutely fantastic.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan. It's Susan Tassone, TASSONE.com. You will find her books on purgatory at the EWTNRC.com, the religious catalog at EWTN. This has been an amazing broadcast. Happy Thanksgiving weekend again to all of you. Back live on Monday, believe it or not, Advent is coming, so we're going to talk about keeping focused on Advent as the holidays approach. Have a beautiful and blessed day.